Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In 2020, the San Francisco Giants drafted R.J. Dablovich from Arizona State University. He went from a kid who did not like baseball to a top draft pick by the Giants, hitting 100 miles per hour. He has absolutely dominated in pro ball, making it all the way to AAA in just 2 years. Giant beat writers have raved about him all season. I got to talk to R.J. and we talk about his high school career, where he was absolutely dominant. We discuss playing in one of the more iconic JUCOs out there, and crazy stories such as post-game wrestling and insane punishments only found in the junior college environment. We discuss Arizona State and playing with fellow studs like Hunter Bishop and Torkelson. RJ was awesome to talk, and I let him know that he might make me do something I've never done in my life. I explain what that is and why in the interview, so listen to the end. Anyways, always leave a review and give us a follow. Enjoy the pod. RJ Dablovich, how is it going, brother?
Not too bad. And yourself?
I'm doing great. Did I pronounce the last name right?
Yeah, you did.
All right. I was practicing as soon as before you got on, just standing looking in the mirror like, I got to get this right. I can't screw this up.
It's not an easy one.
Yeah, perfect. Well, how's it going in Arizona? You're there for the off season. How's that going?
It's going pretty good. Just hanging out right now, just kind of relaxing, letting the body recover before I, get back into the gym and start getting after it again. Probably in about a week or two or so. Just enjoying my downtime right now and hanging out with some friends and family and just having a blast.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of like family out in Arizona? Because I know you're from California originally, right? Oh, no,
Colorado originally.
Colorado.
I have an aunt down here and an uncle. And then, just hang out with friends. I'm going back to Colorado probably next week to just stop at home and visit my parents and grandparents and all that fun stuff.
That's awesome. So I was looking at your high school stats here, and let's jump right into that. You were the ninth overall ranked player in the state of Colorado. When did you realize you were kind of nasty at baseball?
I thought I was in high school, junior year, I was, coming back from a little arm injury. I didn't pitch a whole lot. And then senior year, I thought I was pretty cool, good. And then I went to junior college and realized that I wasn't that good. And then after my freshman year, junior college is when I developed, I actually thought that I was, pretty nasty. And that was the realization for me that I could pursue a career in baseball and actually make something of it.
Yeah, well, I'm not a stats guy, but dude, I was looking at your stats in high school. In varsity, you were 7-2 with a .80 ERA and almost about 70 innings pitched. I mean, is that good? You tell me a .80 ERA.
Not bad.
So like you mentioned, you thought you were kind of hot stuff in high school. Obviously with those numbers and stuff, and being a top ranked prospect and all that kind of stuff, how was it with that pressure of being I don't know if you were that dude on your team, but just being that one of those top guys in your state?
I mean, I didn't really feel a lot of pressure in high school. We had a really good baseball club down there, a lot of, good quality players. So it kind of dispersed it out where if I ever had a bad game, someone was going to find a way to pick me up. Yeah. Granted, I didn't have a lot of bad games in high school, but again, I had so much fun playing with my friends in high school and competing with them that there was never really a big pressure to win or pressure to do good. It was just more about having fun with my friends and hanging out every day.
Yeah. When did you start playing baseball? Like, were you like in T-ball and all that kind of stuff?
I was about 10, 11 years old, like fourth to fifth grade. I hated baseball in elementary school. I loved football, loved basketball. Wow. I thought baseball was pretty boring. And I only started playing because one of my friends during the summer, like all my friends were playing.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't want to not hang out with them. So like, why not just play baseball? Like it's just going to be a way to hang out with them. Just another thing. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, it was fun. I had a good time. And 2-3 years go by and then I start to fall in love with baseball.
Yeah. So you went from like, baseball is okay, kind of boring, to like, wow, I'm really good playing for Arizona State. Like, and getting drafted in the fourth round by the San Francisco Giants, one of like a storied franchise. So at what point did you realize I'm going to start taking this more serious?
Probably my freshman, sophomore year of high school.
Okay.
That's when I had like my first kind of velo jump and I started doing a little bit harder, started getting some college looks. And when that happened, I was like, okay, like, I kind of want to like actually pursue this.
Yeah.
Let's see what can happen. And then, you know, I started taking, working out more seriously, my nutrition a little bit more seriously, and just dedication to actual baseball a little more seriously and more full time. And it started to pay off for me.
How hard were you throwing in high school?
Freshman year, I was like mid to upper 70s, maybe low 80s.
Okay.
And sophomore year, again, when I started taking it seriously, I had a pretty big jump and I was like 89 to 91.
Jeez.
And then I committed to Wichita State, and then, you know, I had a little arm issue after that, and then senior year I was like up to 94.
Dang. So what is the hardest you threw in like your senior year?
Senior year was 94, and it was the playoff game against, I think it was Valor Christian. I was up to 94, yeah, and that was pretty cool.
So what maybe would be like your advice for guys in like high school trying to like get that velo game? Because nowadays, like, velocity is like so big, like everyone wants to throw hard and you throw hard, but like, what was maybe something that worked for you in order to gain like that velocity?
I mean, the few biggest things are, one, just trust it's gonna come. Like, mm-hmm. like don't like freak out about it. Like, as you mature in age, you're gonna start throwing harder. It's just how the body works. But other than that, like, work out, gain weight, gain muscle mass, gain flexibility. And just get in the weight room, get with a trainer, and really work.
Yeah.
And if you put the work in the weight room, then again, as you mature, as you grow, the velo will come. Like, all young kids chasing velo, like, yeah, it's cool, but like, at the end of the day, like, it's something that comes with age. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that you can just instantly go get as a 12-year-old. Like, hey, yeah, I'm gonna go grind and pull down weighted balls for, you know, 3 months. And I'm going to throw 90. Like, sometimes it takes a maturing with age and maturing with your body and just sticking to it and sticking to the grind, and you'll see the numbers pay off eventually.
Yeah. And speaking of numbers, like I said, I'm not a stats guy, but like, I'm just checking out some of these stats, dude. Like, kind of nasty. Like, your senior year, your ERA was 0.27. Were you just body bagging hitters in Colorado like all season long?
Yeah. I mean, again, like, nothing against, I think Colorado baseball is slept on, but, the reason why I slept on is because I'd say more than half the teams are kind of that poor talent, you know.
Yeah.
Just they don't have a really good coach. They don't, like, you know, they're lacking on players.
Yeah.
So like, half the teams in that 4A Colorado baseball are like kind of tough. Now there is some good talent in the other half, but again, like, you kind of like feast on that lower half.
And sure.
You can have a few good games against the good teams. And you end up with some pretty good numbers at the end.
That makes sense. So, like, who was maybe someone else that was pretty good, like, in your state? Like, maybe you played against in travel ball, or somebody who ended up going D1, getting drafted, stuff like that.
I mean, we had a bunch of good kids, especially my senior year. There was me, Jacob Hilton, who went to Central Arizona with me, at Caleb Sloan. We actually have a little group that's called the Fuzz Club.
Nice.
That was kind of all of us. We were all working out together. And we had probably like 5 or 6 guys in the low to mid 90s senior year, which, again, like, in Colorado, that's a lot.
That's gas in Colorado.
So it was pretty cool. You know, good hitters. Played against Otremba, Tanner Otremba. He went to I went, I think, Texas Tech, and then Arizona, and actually got drafted by the Giants this last year.
Oh, cool.
So that was pretty cool. And then Cole Wynn was another one I played against, who is, yeah. You know, he's Cole Wynn. He's pretty nasty, too. So, yeah, they're good. Again, there's a good group of high school baseball players in Colorado. It's just every year they start to get a little bit more looks at, and then all of a sudden, like, they're pretty pretty good at the end of it.
Yeah, so let's dive deeper into this Fuzz Club, or what did you call it?
Yeah, the Fuzz Club.
So who came up with the name? Was that like an actual club, or is that just you guys got together, like, what are we going to call ourselves? Like, we need the name.
We all kind of worked out with this guy named Sean Cashman. He was kind of like our pitching coach, kind of mental skills coach, like all around, just kind of good guy, good coach guy. And we started working out, and then I forgot who coined it, and it just kind of came up, and it was pretty fun, and then we all kind of took it to heart, and kind of like owned the personality of it.
Yeah. So all of you guys were just pitchers, just throwing gas?
Yeah, trying to anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's so sick. Okay, cool. Yeah, and like you talk about Colorado, like the state of like how many good players come out of Colorado. So I grew up in California, like where they just produce talent. Me, apparently. Yeah. I got missed. But everyone else that comes out there, you know, is pretty good. I've talked to guys like in the Midwest where it snows a lot, or like even from Canada where it snows a lot, and I'm sure Colorado gets a pretty good amount of snow. So you can't practice like year round like the Florida kids, the California kids. So throwing like 94, that's like the equivalent probably hitting triple digits in like these other states.
Sometimes, yeah, definitely. I mean, again, like the biggest thing is like a lot of Colorado kids see velo gains in college because we call it thawing out. You know what I mean? Like you get out of the cold, get on a throwing program and get working out year round and outside, and all of a sudden you blossom into this, you know, if you were 90, 92 in high school, again, with maturity, with thawing out, all of a sudden you're 92 to 95 and throwing cheese. And it's just, again, like always stick to it. Like if you think you can, you can. So always stick to it.
Yeah, I mean, I got to figure out how I can get involved in the Fuzz Club. I got to figure out how I can start throwing. Maybe I have to get into a throwing program. Maybe that's going to be my program. See if a non-baseball player can start hitting some gas and stuff like that. When did you first hit triple digits throwing? Or have you hit triple digits? Have you hit 100?
I have, I think, twice. The first time was during COVID workouts. And it was a pretty fun day. Like, a few weeks prior, I was throwing live ABs, and I was like 96, 97, 98. Like, it was, I was throwing hard, and then, you know, took a week off and came back right after the draft, too. Like, literally, I wanted to say like 4 or 5 days after the draft, and came in through a live AB. And like, the first at bat was, I didn't throw a pitch under 98.
Dang.
And then the next at bat, I was like 96 and a half, 96 and 90, or 90, sorry, 99.6, 99.7, 99.8. And then I was finishing up, and I was like, okay, I'm just not gonna not try.
Yeah.
So there's a batter in the box, but I mean, I just chucked it as hard as I could, like four straight times, and the last one was 100.1.
There you go. So what was that like? What was that emotion or that feeling of like, all right, dude, I just hit triple digits?
I mean, it was awesome. Like, you so kind of sick. Like work for, like, if you want to throw hard, like that's the, you know, at the end of the day, that's the arbitrary goal, is getting 100. And for some people, it's just not anatomically possible.
Yeah.
So you always wonder if like your ceiling is 99.
Sure, sure.
And then when you finally break through and get that number, you're like, oh damn, like,
yeah,
now how high can I go? So pretty cool. You know, I've been working hard and trying to get to 101. I haven't gotten there yet, but hopefully next year we can get to it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so when you hit 100, were you thinking to yourself like, all right, I'm kind of a dog?
Yeah.
Like, I might be good at this game.
It was kind of funny because his name was Rob Emery. He's with the Giants too. He's with my agency, and his first professional at bat in those live babies was against me, and it was when I was 99, 99.8, 100. He's like, "Yeah, you're kind of nasty, bro." And I was like, "Hey, thanks."
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty cool, and then just that whole environment, training, and the COVID was awesome, and I think it was great for my development.
Do you think having that year of like that COVID where you can just focus on developing, like kind of maybe in the long term, like obviously different circumstances, but like ideally, but maybe that was just very beneficial for you before you like entering pro ball?
I mean, that was huge. I mean, I got like a nice player plan from the Giants right when I got drafted. And with that, you know, 7, 8, 9 months off, I was really able to just not worry about any results anywhere because I wasn't playing in an actual game. It was only development, working on my pitches, working on what they want me to work on, working on my command. And that, you know, 7 months was huge for me because it allowed me to jumpstart what I needed to work on. Without having to play games through it, I don't know if I would be as good as I am now.
Yeah. And like, whenever I Google your name or just like search like articles about you, it's just giant beat writers just falling in love with you, saying how fast you're progressing. And like, you may be, some were saying you might be called up this past season, and you're in AAA now, which is sick. But like before that in high school, like how were the college visits? Like at one point, like did you start, and why didn't, like was Colorado State like never an option? Or do they look at you as like the one who got away? Like that's our guy?
I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of like Division I programs in Colorado. There's a few junior colleges, a few D2s. And I originally committed as a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
So kind of like pushed away all like the Colorado colleges from recruiting me. And then when I eventually decommitted and reopened up my commitment, no one in Colorado really was talking to me. I don't know if the whole situation there. I mean, if CU Boulder ever had a program, I mean, that would have been insane because I definitely would have gone there. But again, when it was all said and done, like my senior year when I decommitted and started looking around again, like I just felt that junior college was the best route for me. And yeah, Central Arizona felt like a great fit, felt like, you know, a good culture, a good baseball atmosphere down there. And definitely thought I was going to get better, and I definitely did.
So, yeah, let's talk about JUCO. And I love talking to guys who went JUCO because, like, the stories I hear coming out of JUCO colleges are insane. But why the JUCO route? Like, I understand it because you can go 1 year, get drafted, and there's so many good JUCO colleges that will compete with any D1 school. Mm-hmm. But, like, for you personally, like, what was kind of, like, your reasoning to go there?
The biggest thing was betting on myself. Again, like, after I decommitted, I only had a few mid-major offers towards the end of my senior year. And none of them felt like a good fit. Like, I always thought that, you know, I could go to a bigger school and compete there. But by the time, again, I just didn't have an offer. So I was like, okay, do I either take the safe route, you know, go to this mid-major and pitch and hopefully progress and do better, or do I go to Central Arizona, grind my ass off, you know, get better at baseball and see what can actually happen? And at the end of the day, after a few long talks with my parents, my friends, you know, my mentors, it just kind of felt like the best route for me was to bet on myself and go that junior college route. And I mean, I'm forever thankful I did. That was one of the best years of my life. Baseball, on the field, off the field, around friends. And I mean, the guys down there are still my friends to this day.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them in 3 years.
So basically, the moral of the story is bet on yourself because you never know.
Always bet on yourself, man. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
It's just a different, like, once you bet on yourself and you're like, your back's against the wall, you're like, okay, I have to get, like, I chose this route. I chose to do this. Like, I don't know. It just brings something out of any competitor out there, and it always pushes them to be better.
Yeah. And your team was, like, insane. In Central Arizona, like, they have such a culture. Like, so I think I was reading, like, over 100, maybe 150 guys who have gotten drafted or gone on to play pro ball with, like, several, like, all-stars who have gone there. Was that kind of playing a factor into it? Because, like, there's a ton of good JUCOs out there, and, like, obviously that's one of the better ones.
Yeah, I mean, talking to Gilly down there, the head coach, when I was taking my visit there, I liked Arizona. I like staying, you know, a little bit closer to Colorado, a little bit closer to home than, you know, going out to, you know, the West or the East Coast and playing in, like, Chipola, North Florida State, the ones. I just kind of wanted to stay closer to home, went there, and talking to him, talking to the players who were there, they loved it there, and everything it stood for. So I just wanted to be a part of that culture, and it was awesome. Yeah. Like, the way they develop players and the way they turn out prospects, like, it's one of the greatest, again, atmospheres in baseball, in my opinion.
All right, so let's talk about this. So you guys were good. You're 45-13 your season there, and you were just obviously dominating there. Do you have any funny JUCO stories? Because I've talked to guys who went to, like, the Chipotle route, or even to who went to Wabash Valley in here in Chicago, and, like, they would talk to me about, like, they got in trouble and their coach has to punish them by making them wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning and do these crazy drills, or run, like, a couple of them have to run miles, 2 miles after every, like, bullpen up and down a mountain, like, all these just insane stories. Like, what do you got from your JUCO?
I mean, I have countless of insane stories. I know that for sure. A lot of them I can't speak on. But, you know, we had that morning conditioning, you know, every single day, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the fall, where we'd run up the mountain, you know, like a 2-mile desert run, and then up the mountain, you know, 10 times. And if anyone ever, you know, threw up on the mountain, which was inevitable, we always call it calling the dinosaurs, because you were just, you know, calling the dinosaurs. It was, again, it was just such a good team, such a fun team that we'd, anytime we swept the team or swept the week, which was, you know, we were 4-0 in the week, we'd wrestle in the, we had a little modular trailer as our locker room with like hardwood floors. And you just call someone out and wrestle them for no reason.
That's so sick.
It was a blast. I mean, looking back on it again, it was one of the best years of baseball on and off the field in my life. Again, the memories you make in junior college and college in general are just, you know, so valuable. Yeah.
No, for sure. So, did you do a lot of wrestling yourself? Like, were you pretty good? Like, I'm not much of a wrestler, but like, did you hold your own?
I got my fair share. Yeah, I feel like I had a winning record. I mean, I don't know. I don't really remember that.
We'll start the narrative that we don't. Nobody should mess with you. Let's say like there's
I went undefeated in JUCO. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll start then undefeated in wrestling in JUCO. Your wrestling career undefeated. I'm gonna go ahead and tag that. so we'll start the narrative that if you're ever in a baseball brawl, like don't mess with him because like JUCO Bandit, like. Undefeated wrestler, like that's gonna be the narrative. We'll start circulating around the Giant fans there.
Oh jeez.
Yeah. So did you like maybe what was like one story like did your coach ever have like a story of trying to like to motivate the boys, like maybe like a couple war stories or something? Like what was like his motivational speech?
No, but it was never really like a huge motivational speech. Like he wasn't a big like rah-rah kind of guy. He just kind of told it how it was and kind of let the players play and express themselves.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were such a rowdy bunch. Like, we didn't really need, like, getting pepped up. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we love trash. I get junior college, you're kind of still allowed to. We love trash talk. We love, you know, getting in people's grills and just fucking letting them hear it. Yeah. Bro. Like, it was wild. Like,
what was one team that you just loved to, like, pitch against because like their fans were maybe the chirpiest or maybe some of the guys there were a little cocky?
Again, in junior college everyone was cocky and all the games were always so chippy in conference. I mean, again, like the amount of times you would mouth off to the other dugout, three, four, five. I mean, there wasn't a single game in junior college in conference but we didn't get a warning from the umpires in the second inning. Like it was just like that chippy and that edgy all the time, which was why it was so fun, because it was just raw competitiveness. There was no like, you know, backing down. There was no like doing like the proper thing and not talking trash. It was whatever you wanted to say, you said it when you wanted to say it, and you better back it up.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it was a blast because, again, just the chippiness, the competition was through the roof.
Yeah, and then you ended up getting drafted after that. Like, how hard was it saying no? Because then you're betting on yourself again. That might just be, like, the story of your career so far, just betting on yourself. You end up going to Arizona State. Like, but how difficult of a decision was it to kind of, like, not get drafted or maybe say no and just go back to college?
I mean, it was definitely tough. But at the end of the day, I just had a look in the mirror probably about 2 weeks after I got drafted, about 2 weeks before the deadline. And I just could feel I just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, maturity off the field, like, I'm not there yet to take care of myself. On the field, I still don't, like, I was a power pitcher, but I had a long way to go into being a successful professional baseball player. And talking to a few people, it just felt like I was going to get more development at a university, you know, get my education a little bit more, because that's always important. And then just develop for 2 years. With a stress-free year in between that sophomore year, I was like, you know what? I think that's my best bet. I could really work on stuff, and I could take these steps in my progression to where, like, I'll be comfortable going into Pro Bowl and being ready to compete right away.
Yeah, okay. Were there any other colleges or universities maybe kind of looking at you? Because obviously you're putting up numbers. You're hitting, you know, pretty high. You're throwing gas. Like,
Definitely had a good amount of offers. One of the funny ones was Colorado University of Northern Colorado.
Okay.
They're good. Like the recruiting guy there was good friends with my advisor at the time. Pretty sure they still are, but he called me and asked me, how would I like it? It was like 185% scholarship. Just as a joke more or less, cause they knew they weren't going to get me, but they just wanted to say they offered me just two, but yeah,
something
185% scholarship to go there. And it was a pretty good running joke. But yeah, I mean, Tennessee was a big one that I really liked. TCU was another big one. South Carolina. But again, at the end of the day, I just felt at home at Arizona State. You know, I was already from basically Arizona at the time because it's Central Arizona. I love, you know, the idea of playing with Torque and Bishop and all.
Yeah, that's sick.
I mean, that sold me a lot more than anything else was the ability to win right away.
Yeah.
In sophomore year, we dealt with some injuries, dealt with stuff like that, which kind of dampened our season. And then obviously the COVID year, when we really felt like we were going to make a push, it's, you know, went to hell in a handbasket. The entire world did.
Yeah, and that's crazy. And like, how was the visit to Arizona State? Like, obviously, they're probably, you went on a couple different recruiting visits. Like, were you able to go to football games? Maybe, you know, go out with the boys, show you around. Like,
but when I took my visit, it was probably mid July.
Okay.
So just because, again, it was after the draft, and I hadn't, you know, decided what I was going to do yet, so I wanted to take my visits, and so it was mid July. No one was on campus.
Dang.
The only thing I did was I hung out with Lyle Wynn, who was with the Diamondbacks, and he was actually in AAA this year too. But hung out with him. The freshmen were on campus for workouts, so like that was basically all I did. Showed me around campus, stuff like that. But again, just the culture that was being built at Arizona State, the players that were there, the competition I was going to face in the fall, day in and day out. I just thought that was just such a good fit for me.
How sick is that, like, locker room and, like, the setup that they have? Because I feel like I've seen it on videos. Like, it looks just sweet.
It's pretty awesome, and they keep improving on it. Bloomquist over there is doing a great job right now with that program.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we got that. We have a pitching lab now.
Yeah.
They have those batting cages that are awesome. So, like, even now coming back, like, you always get a good group of mm-hmm. alumni coming back and training there. Because of, you know, the culture and the facilities that Arizona mm-hmm. State has provided us, and it's awesome.
Are you just able to go there whenever you want then and, like, practice? You kind of have, like, open invitation?
More or less, yeah. I just the courtesy of shooting blew me a text saying, hey, like, I'm going to show up and work out and whatnot. Yeah. Just more of a common courtesy type yep, thing. Yep. But, I mean, yeah, again, it's a good like, me and Torque and Tolman and a few other guys went there last year, had live ABs,
so
ground
sick.
Balls. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, it's just good to have that alumni backing and those alumni there to talk to and hang out with. It's awesome.
And how was it playing with those guys? Because you mentioned just like Torque and Bishop, I think also was there, right? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was a blast just because, I mean, that offense was so good and so explosive that like you were never out of a game. And I mean, I just, it was awesome. And see, Bishop, his junior year, that first half of the season was probably the best hitter on the planet. And that was fun to watch.
Yeah. Did he got drafted by the Giants too, or no?
Giants in the, I think it was 10th overall.
Yeah.
In 19, want to say. I feel like that's right.
That's crazy. And you were 7-1 there, 3 saves. Like how fun was it? Like, or did you get to experience any college football days when you were there? Cause
yeah, we went to a few college football games. I mean,
how was
it
in the Pac-12?
So
yeah.
I mean, it's the Pac-12. Like, it's not really a football conference, but it was so hot that. I mean, you just kind of went to the games and sweated out. It was a good time. I mean, definitely, there was some fun times with the boys at the games and then the after parties afterwards. Yeah. But
did the coach make you guys run practices in the morning or maybe the evening before so you guys don't get after it too much or no?
The only time he would like hold us like really accountable was if we got like in trouble. Like one party, we had a noise complaint. We had a 5 a.m. conditioning the next morning. Yeah. But like, I mean, he knew it was college. He knew what was going on. And as we kept our noses clean and they didn't get into any real trouble. Like, he was all for us, you know, being a team, bonding, and having fun together.
That's so cool. So what would maybe he compare, not him, but, like, in general, like, compared to, like, a JUCO, like, if you guys got in trouble, compared to, like, getting in trouble at, like, a D1 school, like, is it a big difference? I feel like with the rules and different stuff, like, they may have you do these.
It definitely was, just because you could get road in JUCO, and there was just no
get away with it.
Regulations around it. Yeah, I remember last practice in fall in JUCO, one of the kids got a DUI, and it was a last practice. We all went. We had a bonfire the night before, and we were like, you know what? Like, we're just gonna go out. We're gonna have, you know, catch and BP in the morning at 9 to 10, and be done for the fall.
Yeah.
We got to practice at 8:30. No, none of the coaches were there, and we were like, oh, what's going on? Like, all of us are a little hungover at the time. I'm like, oh, what's going on? He comes out just red as can be and goes, All right, everybody, go put your running shorts on and your tennis shoes on and meet me in the corner. And I think we ran triangles for about 4 hours straight.
Jeez.
And there were, I mean, there were several times where I would just like start running. I'd like look down, close my eyes, and I'd wake up back at the start. And I had no idea how I got there. Because, I mean, it was tough, but I can tell you, we never got in trouble again after that.
Yeah. Did you find out, like, did you guys know why you were doing it, or it was?
We didn't know until, like, they gave us, like, a break, like, about halfway through, where they, like, got water, obviously, and they're like, come on, guys, like, we can't let this happen, like, this is how seasons get derailed before they even get started.
Wow.
And they explained to us everything that happened, and then we kind of, you know, realized and whatnot. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, everyone was safe. You know, the guy faced his consequences for what he did, and no one was worse for it.
Yeah,
so,
but it just goes to show you how, like, insane you, because in a D1 school, you're not running 4 hours in the middle of Arizona. Like, you.
Wow.
Jeez. So what about playing in Arizona? Like, was there a team that maybe, because it's not as chippy as, like, JUCOs and stuff, but was there a team there that you kind of like to throw against, maybe? Like, you had, like, your best game where you just, like, all right, I'm carving right now.
I mean, I probably wouldn't say it was my best game. It's probably one of my worst games in college, but I mean, the funnest game was Arizona.
Okay.
I mean, the rivalry is awesome. The fans get into it. They pack the house. I think we got like 8,000 every single game, which was, you know, awesome in college baseball. So, like, that game against them and that whole series, we ended up sweeping them my junior year or sophomore year, but that whole series, that midweek game, it was electric, and it was just a blast.
Yeah. So talk to me about draft day, because obviously with COVID, and I've talked to maybe four or five guys from that draft year, and everyone has basically said around the same thing, as like, you didn't know what to expect, because it's only five rounds. But, like, what was your mindset going into it, and were you, like, pretty confident, or, like, maybe, like, kind of iffy, like, thinking about the possibility of getting drafted?
At first, like, the first, you know, going into the day itself, I was pretty confident that I was going to get taken. Didn't know where. I mean, I heard things from anywhere from, you know, middle second to end of the fourth. But as the draft went on, I definitely started to sweat it out a little bit. And then in the third round, when I just remember one guy signed for like $25,000.
Yep.
And then it was just an absolute frenzy of, like, random picks and under slot and way over slot. And I just remember calling texting my agent. There was a meme of the dog in the room of fire saying it's fine.
yeah.
And I remember sending him that. And I'm like, what do we got, Alex? Like, this is just insane. And then the third round went by where I thought I was going to go in the third round, to the Indians. And then the fourth round happened, and I hadn't gotten a call since. And then the Giants called me and were like, all right, like, this is the offer we have for you. We can't give you any more money. Are you going to take it? And again, at the end of the day, I was like, I don't want to go back to school. Like, I got everything I could out of Arizona State.
Yeah.
I think I want to, you know, see where I stack up against in my career and in pro ball. And it just, felt like a good fit.
Yeah.
Felt like I was going to be able to compete and progress right away and early on. And, you know, great choice.
Yeah. Did you ever play with Hayden Cantrell? Yeah, I know he would think he. I don't know if he's in the Giants org. I think he's in the Giants org.
He's in the Giants org now, but we traded for him in like early season.
Yep.
And we just never crossed paths yet.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'll see him in spring training next year, I assume.
Yeah. But, he was drafted in 2020.
Was he too?
Yeah. And he by the Brewers. They drafted him.
Oh, okay.
And he was traded from the Brewers to the Giants. He's been in the pod. He's a good guy. YouTuber, okay. Like, he has all these videos and stuff, like, he's into that, all that kind of stuff, really good guy. But we're talking to him about, like, just the stress, and, like, he said he was kind of calm, but his parents were, like, freaking out, and, like, because he was kind of, like, keeping things on the wraps, and then, like, everything kind of finally worked out. But yeah, I'm sure you'll bump ass with him at some point. He's a really good guy as well. So you get drafted by the Giants in the fourth round. Obviously, that's really good. Like, how was that feeling? And, like, knowing that you bet on yourself to go to JUCO, you bet on yourself to go back to college, you go to Arizona State, and now you get drafted in the fourth round. Like, what was that kind of, like, feeling for you?
I mean, it was definitely just a complete rush of emotion. Yeah. I got to, you know, spend it with my family, even with, you know, COVID going on. I got to see my grandparents, couple of aunts, couple of uncles, and just being around everyone, and because everyone around me had made sacrifices for me up to that point. So just, you know, getting to share that moment with them, and I mean, it was one of the, again, probably one of the most special days of my life to this point. It's something I'll just always cherish no matter what happens in my career. Like, I'll always be able to look back and look at that moment and spend time with my family, sharing that moment with them, and just feeling those emotions again.
So you get drafted. Obviously, the signing bonus isn't what it would have been, you know, outside of different years, you know, with COVID and all that. But, well, this is a good chunk of change. Like, what was maybe the first dumb thing you purchased with your signing bonus?
I mean, honestly, nothing. The most expensive thing I bought in the last 2 years was just an iPad, just because I didn't I just traded my laptop, got an iPad. But other than that, like, again, like you said, it wasn't a huge, it was a good chunk of change, but it wasn't life changing money. So I put it all away. I invested it all and letting it grow and using it more as a, you know, retirement fund after baseball, or as a way to keep my career going if I run into some financial problems.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been as smart as I can be with my money. Like, I'll go and, you know, a few shops. But again, just try and save it. Just try and keep it stashed away for the future. And I'm fine for it.
Yeah. No, awesome. That's good for you. Like, I've heard you guys tell me they bought chains and, you know, they bought the fancy cars and all that kind of stuff. You never know. It's good for you for being very frugal and saving, investing. Yeah. No, I hear that. So you obviously, you made that switch from being like a starter to a reliever. Like, what went into that? And when did that happen? Was that in college, or like, did the Giants see you and you're like, well, we maybe see you as a reliever now?
Yeah. I mean, to start off my year in college, my junior year, me and the pitching coach sat down and had a pretty long heart-to-heart talk about him seeing, because, I mean, obviously I want to be a starter, like, the draft, the money's made as a starter, you know, in baseball in general, money's made as a starter. So I was like, I want to be a starter. Like, I've always been one. I've been a pretty, you know, successful one. Like, I want to be a starter. But he talked to me and said, like, look, like, the way you pitch, what you have in your arsenal, like, the way you are, you're a bullpen arm. Like, you're a closer, late innings leverage guy. And if you trust me, like, you're going to be fine. Like, you're going to go far in baseball and you're going to compete for a long time. And it was really hard because he was a new pitching coach at the time.
Yeah.
And me and him were just starting to build a rapport. And for him to, you know, kind of drop that on me, it was a tough pill to swallow at first. But again, at the end of the day, I just wanted to help the team win. I bought into it. Was pretty successful as a reliever. And then again, when the Giants drafted me, at first, they said they were going to decide they wanted me to start, come out of the pen. And then in instructs, I only came out of the pen, pitched well. And then I was like, okay, like, I'm fine being a reliever. Like, I think, again, it suited my play style and everything. Now, I did get a start this year, and it was pretty good, but only one.
How many innings did you go?
I went two. I went two innings and five punchies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're like an opener kind of thing.
It was an open, yeah.
But it's a start. We'll call it a start.
It's a start. It's a start in the books.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was I mean, starting's fun, but again, at the end of the day, I just felt more at home in the bullpen. And yeah, I love it down there.
What do you do to get yourself hyped up in order to pitch? Because like, I've talked to guys who have done things from like drowning themselves, like a couple guys in the Marlins organization that would literally just like inhale water and drown themselves and kind of gets that rush. Some use Red Bull, you know, smelling sauce. Like, what is your like thing to get hyped up before you pitch?
Definitely some caffeine.
Okay.
At some point, either before the game, in the middle of the game, right before I go in, just kind of depends on the day. Try not to, you know, get too caught up in a routine or anything like that going into the game, because you never know what can happen out of the bullpen. But Red Hot's always on my arm, and caffeine. Those are the two biggest things.
Have you ever tried smelling sauce or no?
I have, but not in season, just in like
workouts,
yeah. You know, bullpens, trying to hit a PR, and they're definitely a rush. They're definitely a good time.
Yeah. Did you do that before you hit 100?
I did not know.
So you hit 100 with no smelling salts. That's pretty intense.
No smelling salts, no Red Hot. So
jeez, that's pretty sick.
If I can get back there, who knows? Maybe 101.
Yeah, I was going to say, you do that again a little, you know, you might hit 101, 102. We'll see what happens. We'll be hearing all about you in Giants, all from Giants fandom and writers and all that kind of stuff. So let's talk about the minors. So, like, I love hearing stories about guys who grind in the minors from whatever it may be, like broken down buses to like crazy fans. Like, do you have any funny minor league stories?
I got a few. Like, last year, we played in Altoona. Yeah, like, there was that double road trip.
Mm-hmm.
We played in Altoona, played the game. It was like a 6 o'clock game, so we didn't get done until 8, and we're driving to Binghamton, which is like, it's only like 4 hours. We're gonna get there at midnight. We like, everyone's asleep on the bus. We pull over at like 11:30, and there's the traffic is just stopped. We're on a 2-lane highway, and it's stopped, and there's just no movement because there's like there's apparently a crash like 3 miles ahead. So we stayed in on a 2-lane highway in the middle of Pennsylvania from about 11 a.m. to about 4 a.m.
Jeez.
And all we were just stuck. So all we did, we sat on the guardrail and drank beers with the entire team, the coaching staff, the trainers, the media guys, the broadcasters. We're all just there, just drinking beer, waiting for this traffic to clear up. And we didn't end up not getting to Binghamton until like, I want to say like 6 a.m.
Jeez.
It was pretty wild.
That's crazy. Yeah, like minor league travel is no joke.
No joke. I mean, even this year, it was pretty, so we played in Tacoma and we were flying back, and our flight got canceled like 3 days before from back to Sacramento. So like we had to split the team into like three separate flights. And obviously, you know, the young guys, me included, were on late flight.
Yeah.
So we flew from Tacoma to San Francisco, and we landed in San Francisco at like 2 a.m. They had a bus back, and the bus driver was late. So again, we didn't get on the bus till like 3:45, 4 o'clock in the morning. Jeez. And we bussed back to Sacramento.
Yeah. But yeah. That's insane.
It's always, I mean, funny stories, you know, yeah. It's good. The long travel days always make for the best stories.
Yeah. But the fact is that you're doing it, it sucks, and it does. And like, you're professional baseball players and you should have a little bit better travel, but like, you're grinding with the boys and that kind of makes
exactly.
It like, you're not going through it alone, right? You have a group of guys.
Yeah, that you're with the boys, you're with guys with, you know, like minds and in the same situation. So
yeah.
Most of the time you just joke about it, about how bad it is, and then you just get through it together.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Have you had any funny fan interactions? Cause I've had guys tell me like they've had fans run onto the bus, while they were leaving to try to take pictures, and like, fans starting fights and stuff. Like, I mean, obviously, like, minor league stadiums are really, they're smaller and you can hear them all and stuff. Like, have you had any like interesting like fan interactions?
The only thing I could think of was last year we had a Taiwanese pitcher named Kai Wei Tang, and we were in, I want to say, Tri-Cities. It's like the middle of like, what is it, Washington and Idaho. It's like that border. It's middle of nowhere. And he pitches on Sunday, and he has a fan club, like a Taiwanese fan club. That's in Tri-City, Washington. Just like 40, 50 Taiwanese people is holding up signs. We get on the bus after the game, and he's walking out, and they line the bus. They give us all high fives, and then they give Kai Wei like stuffed animals and Korean snacks. It was hilarious. And Kai Wei is just awesome. He's just a big panda bear. But he's awesome, and that was just hilarious.
And so, what is your favorite snack? Speaking of snacks, like in the bullpen, like what's your go-to snack?
Oh, definitely seeds. They're called cha-cha seeds. They're actually Kai Wei put me onto them. They're Asian seeds, and they're unreal.
What is one stadium in AAA that maybe has like the best bread?
Best bread?
Or like, yeah, just maybe they just hook it up. I've heard like a couple different teams are like they just hook it up.
I have to go with our home Sacramento. We have a private chef up there, Michelle.
That's sick.
And she was awesome. I mean, she didn't make a single bad meal the entire year, which is pretty tough to say in minor league baseball.
Yeah, but and like was. Not very. Do most teams have private chefs? Because I don't think that I've never heard.
There's probably a handful of boards with them, and we were lucky enough to have one this year. I don't know if there was one last year, but this year we had one. And again, she was awesome. Made great food and always accommodated to you. She was the best.
Yeah. Like, what is your favorite food or meal, like post-game meal that she would make?
She always made steaks, like tri-tip and some like mashed sweet potatoes, asparagus, broccoli. It was really good. Really good.
Cool. Like awesome. I said, a lot of organizations don't have that, because I've never heard anybody say that they had a chef. They're pretty much just getting you ready for the show.
I guess so. Yeah. I can't complain.
And I'm going to say this. I'm going to put this on record. You might do something that no one has ever done before, and that's make me cheer for the Giants.
There you go.
I grew up hating the Giants because I was an A's fan growing up in California.
Okay.
And there's always that Bay Area rivalry. Like, the Giants were like the big brother, and the A's were kind of like that scrappy, you know, don't pay younger a lot of their players. Kind of thing. So we kind of looked up at the Giants, and then they would win 3 out of 3 World Series in like 5 or 6 years. And like everyone I went to school with would be like, you know, like 3 World Series rings, blah, blah, blah. And then all we had was 89 when the A's beat the Giants. So like I kind of grew up like having that, like, not a hatred, but just like a friendly rivalry with them.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And you're the first guy from the Giants organization that I've interviewed. So like,
really?
I guess, yeah, I haven't had any Giants guys on. Maybe that's just my bias and I'm like, I don't want them. But somehow I convinced myself to get you on. And like I said, you might make me want to cheer for the Giants now, especially once you make the show. Because if you're in the show and you're here in Milwaukee, like I have the calendar circled on my calendar here, the dates that San Francisco comes to Milwaukee, and I'm assuming you're going to make your major league debut. And when that day comes here and you're in Milwaukee, like, we're going to have to chop it up a little bit.
Hey, yeah, I'm down. Let's do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So tell Giants fans a little bit about you, and let's end on this. Like, maybe, like, something like your music that you like, or like, what do you, when you're not pitching, what do you do for fun? Give something to Giants fans a little bit to listen to get to know you better.
Big cook, big coffee guy. Those are my two biggest things. I love to cook. I mean, I'll cook for my girlfriend almost, you know, every day of the week.
Yeah.
I love to do it. Love experimenting with new foods. You know, big cook. Love to do it. And then coffee. I love coffee. I mean, go out of my way.
What's your go-to, like, brand of coffee?
I go to local roasters, you know. Try not to go to the same place too many times. Like, every time on the road trip, I, you know, find a local place. You know, Tacoma was a great one. I mean, Seattle is a great coffee. Tacoma. Salt Lake has some really good coffee, but love going to coffee shops, love, you know, sampling coffees and tasting that. So those are my two biggest things are cooking and coffee.
Did you ever get any pointers from your guys' chef in AAA?
Every now and then, yeah, she gave me a few recipes I'm going to try out here soon. But the biggest thing was Shelby Miller is an also huge coffee guy.
Okay.
And he taught me a lot about making coffee, kind of like, especially like espresso at home.
Yeah.
So I'm starting doing that this off season. But again, like, awesome. Love coffee. Love coffee and cooking.
How do you make your coffee? Like, what do you do to brew it? Like, do you do like French press?
I use an AeroPress right now.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just it's a little bit cheaper than getting a full on espresso machine. So, you know, use an AeroPress, use some freshly ground coffee, and it's great.
Yeah, I love coffee myself. And like, I was talking to a guy who grew up in like the Washington, Seattle area, and I'm like, no offense, dude, but like, I hate Starbucks. And he's like, it's okay. We don't like it either. Cause you know, Starbucks originated like in from Seattle. Stuff. But like,
it's okay. It's not great. Like, I'd rather not go to Starbucks, not go to big chain coffee shops, but, if I have to, I have to.
Pete's Coffee. I prefer Pete's Coffee.
Pete's Coffee's a pretty good one.
Yeah. They're Phil's Coffee's a, Phil's good.
Phil's Coffee is a really good chain it's a chain, but it's not a chain. It's kind of like that in between phase. Like that's probably that and pizza are the two that I would only really go to.
Yeah.
Chain one.
Yeah. We don't have pizza out here. We don't have Phil's either in Wisconsin.
I think Phil's is only in California.
Maybe like, cause I know there was one in like Palo Alto area. I
think, yeah. Maybe San Jose,
but, So you play in Sacramento. Like what was maybe like your spot to go to? Like maybe like did you become like an In-N-Out fan? I don't know if they have In-N-Out in Sacramento. I'm sure they had to do, but like,
not really. Again, I try to with a private chef. I never had.
Sorry. Yeah, my bad. So. My bad. I don't know. I don't even know why you asked that question. You know, Mr. Private Chef over here.
But yeah, we never really had to get dinners because there was never a bad meal, which is huge. I mean, again, in minor league baseball, usually pencil in 1 or 2 dinners a week. But I mean, again, that just took care of everything. Took stress off of finding food to eat sometimes, and it's good on the Giants, you know, like our org is great. They treat our players the right way. And I love it here.
Yeah. That's sick. Who was one guy like on your team who just got like hounded by fans? Like that one dude that like everybody wanted an autograph for, like autograph seekers are everywhere with their binders of autographs.
Probably Ramos. Probably Ramos. Haley Ramos is definitely a fan for everyone when it comes to autographs. Definitely Ramos.
Okay, that's great. What is the craziest thing you've seen a fan do to get an autograph? Because we talk about like these, like I know like there's a lot of like grown men who would just come with their books and like they're like, hey, sign this autograph. Then you see them every single homestand, like, you know, sign this autograph again.
That's really it. Like, you know, like I haven't seen really too many crazy things. Just again, like that, the same fan coming every single week with 40 cards to sign.
Yeah.
And like the first time, like, oh yeah, I'll sign a card for you. And then you see 40 cards, you sign them all, and you're like, okay, whatever. Like, got sucked into it. And then the next week, like, you're signing autographs for a little kid, and then same guy comes up and hands a book, and you're like, well, I'm already here. How many more can you have? Then he has 40 more.
Jeez, that's crazy. Like I said, fans, they do the wildest things, like whether it's chasing people down on buses or creating a fan club even for your guy out there. Yeah, but hey, I do want to thank you for coming on. I appreciate it, you taking your time to talk and all that. Like, it's super cool. Like I said, I might be a Giants guy now. Like, I don't know. Like, we'll have to see how it works. I might have to see if I can get – maybe you can help me get a couple more of your Giant guys on here. Because, like I said, I haven't –
That's what we can do. We can pull some strings.
Yeah, who's your roommates out there?
Right now, it's just a college buddy and my girlfriend.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, we just got a place out here in Arcadia, and nice and simple. Nothing too crazy.
Okay, right on. Well, I might have to DM you with a couple of requests. Be like, hey, let's work this out and try to get a couple of these guys on here. Cause
yeah, see what we can do.
I appreciate that, brother. All right, hey, you have a good one. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, you too, man. All right, bro. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question: you thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.